At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Imprint Companion. This is a podcast hosted by me, Blake Howard, where we unpack and unbox all of the beautiful, splendid physical media from the boutique Blu-ray label Imprint Films. And today I'm joined by the legendary Bilge Ibiri, who is one of the last totems of a dying and suffocated film criticism in the world and one of my dear friends. He's written an amazing essay in this incredible limited edition 3-disc hard box set of Martin Scorsese's New York, New York. And I had damn never seen this movie before until preparing to talk to him about it. And my first experience was watching the director's cut. So I'm here to be educated and I'm here to take you on my journey of education and listening. Bilge, thank you so much for being here. What a movie. What a movie.
What a strange, strange, strange film. There's a funny line from Scorsese that I included in my essay, and this was years later where he was talking about it in some interviews. He said, "I don't like it, but I think I love it."
<laughs> <laughs> You know? <laughs> That's the best way I can describe it, because it's like, it is so wrestling between eras and moods and tones. And then by the end, one of the most beautiful things you write in your beautiful essay is you, and I don't want to spoil the turn of phrase, but it's this entire wrestle between Robert De Niro's character and Liza Minnelli's character and their love and their place in the world and their legacy that they're trying to achieve and the potential that they're trying to achieve as artists in New York in this post-war period. And it echoes all of these classic Hollywood musicals from a technical standpoint, from a production design standpoint. And it's trying to both have that kind of new Hollywood, angry, urgent energy, as well as fusing it with this. And that's the kind of great tension of the movie. And, you know, why someone like Scorsese could reflect on his own work and say, "I don't like it, but I love it." And I was just kind of going, you had this beautiful realization in your piece about, this is a movie about Liza Minnelli's character. This is her movie. And the movie refuses to surrender to her being the star and really actually embodying that very classic musical thing of like, this is a classic musical. She's the main character there. And it's wrestling with Bobby. And now that I've finally seen this thing, it was one of my major Scorsese blind spots. I'm like, this isn't a him and Robert De Niro collaboration. This is him and Liza. Robert is just there, like, fighting against what the movie is. It's rejecting every impulse that the movie wants to take. And that's kind of what makes it really interesting, because you can almost see that, like, if he had the ability to surrender, that the movie would be exultant, but it just kind of doesn't quite get there. But it's nonetheless, I was fascinated. I was interested. I watched it voraciously. I was like, oh, I don't know how many hours I've got to try and watch the original theatrical version straight after the director's cut. But yeah, it's an amazing curio of a film.
An amazing curio of a film that when I first saw it, I mean, years ago, I would have probably been a teenager, you know, watching it off of Pan and Scan VHS. I didn't particularly care for it. Like, the reputation was it was Scorsese's big dud. Like, I mean, not a lot of his films didn't make a lot of money, but this was the one that didn't make money and the critics didn't like it and everybody kind of wanted to forget it, but it was huge, so there was no way to forget it. And I saw it and I was like, yeah, you know, doesn't really work, has some nice scenes, obviously love to see Robert De Niro, you know, I mean, there's a lot to love in the movie, but you're like, what is this? And but then over the years, I would revisit it, and you wrestle with the film because there are so many good things in it, and it's got, I mean, plus it's got like the birth of the song New York, New York, which is like, I mean, it's about that, but also like one of the greatest songs ever. I mean, how crazy is it? When I would sometimes reflect on this, Scorsese was, while a mainstream filmmaker, kind of a marginal taste, a marginal taste at the time. Like, he was a guy who made really edgy, angry movies, and they weren't like, I mean, Taxi Driver made money, but these weren't like, he wasn't Spielberg, he wasn't Lucas. He was New American Cinema, and well into the 80s, there was always this question of like, when will Martin Scorsese ever make a movie that really makes money? Which is why he wound up doing, I mean, The Color of Money and then Cape Fear. And every once in a while, there'd be like, he'd have to do one
He
movie kind
he'd
of.
do like one gargantuan hit every 5 years just to sort of
Yeah,
flex. It's like Color of
exactly.
Money makes a gazillion bucks. Cape Fear is out of control. Like
Yeah.
is a huge movie, completely unexpectedly massive, massive movie. But and the stench of New York, New York would probably follow those two guys around for quite some time.
Yeah, and but there's always this sense that like he has to make these movies to sort of reward a studio for sticking with him through the more personal thing. Like, it's kind of a, four for me, one for them kind of thing. But we kind of, well, the two things I wanted to point out. The thing that I always found very funny was, for all that, Scorsese gave American pop culture two incredibly iconic things. I mean, he gave it more, but in terms of just like actual piece of content, New York, New York, the song, which is just like one of the most immortal songs. You would never guess that it's actually from a 1977 Martin
Never.
Scorsese
I had no
musical.
clue until I
People
read
think
your
it's like, oh,
essay. I'm
it
like,
must be
wait,
from the 50s,
no, I
No.
it was a rare moment where I read your essay. I'm like, that's not possible. Fact check this. And I was
Yeah.
like, what?
It's Liza Minnelli's song that Frank Sinatra then kind of takes,
Yes.
and turns it into his own. So there's that. But then there's also, and I don't know how, if you guys saw this in Australia, obviously you're younger than me, so you wouldn't have grown up with this, but there was the sitcom Alice,
Yeah.
which was based on Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. I always found that, like, it's one of those factoids, and I'm like, did I dream this? Was this actually not based on Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore? And at some point I imagined that it was, no, it's based on Alice, and like Flow, they're like, it's like Martin Scorsese gave the world Flow. Like all this stuff. Anyway, so he is, like, he's iconic despite trying very hard not to actually be iconic, like
Yeah,
his work is.
and also raging against it in this movie. Like the connection between De Niro and Scorsese is these guys who were so connected and were making such personal films together. He feels like the rage and the resistance to the movie. And yet at the same time, which your great essay actually sort of catalogues, is that like this is also a tumultuous time in Scorsese's life. He's having a tumultuous relationship with Liza Minnelli. They're having affairs. They're there. It's happening right as this film is happening as well. And their relationship in this movie is like him trying to maintain, I guess, he's like his imprint, if you like, sorry to be the pun, but his imprint on the movie without realizing that it's being like liberally stolen right from out from under all his best efforts to change what the movie should be.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about Scorsese that's so valuable, and that we do sometimes forget, especially now when he's kind of in the mode of, kind of a filmmaking god who makes kind of these like big war horse movies, which are all, wonderful, in some cases masterpieces, but he is such a sort of revered figure that I think we forget how much this golden era of his work, the 70s and the 80s too, actually,
The 80s
how
is
much of it, oh yeah,
eighties are underrated, like
oh yeah, absolutely.
incredibly strong decade for him.
And like, how much of it is him really just wrestling with everything, wrestling with his identity, wrestling with cinema, wrestling with like the prevailing trends in cinema, wrestling with like what's happening in the country and specifically in New York, and also just sort of trying to find a place for himself in a world where he himself is so voraciously eager to embrace all of it, right? I mean, when you read the, I had we talked about Raging Bull, right? I was working on the Raging Bull in New York's essays around the same time. So I was reading a lot of the interviews he did around then and also kind of the retrospective interviews he did. And in so many ways, the two movies are nothing like each other, and yet they're kind of the same movie. Right? I think we might have even said this last time.
No,
But it is.
and I couldn't appreciate how spot on that was, which is like,
Yeah.
yeah, they kind of they are.
And they come from the same impulse, which is he wants to be everything, because this is a guy who likes every kind of film, right? This is a guy who loves sort of the exciting sort of new American stuff that's coming out. This is a guy who has a real appreciation for classic Hollywood. This is a guy who adored Italian neorealism, who adores the new wave. This is a guy who loves Hollywood musicals. Like, he loves the colorful fantasias. He loves biblical epics. He loves all of that stuff. And like, in so many ways, I mean, he did make actual documentaries too, but like, really, so much of this is kind of a documentary of his life, all these movies, right? And he's wrestling in all of them. And what happens in New York, I think, is, he's ultimately successful in the thing he sets out to do. The thing is, the thing he sets out to do does not actually result in what one would conventionally call a good movie, right? Because he wants to, he's like, I'm going to make an homage to the classical Hollywood musical. It's going to be like beautiful painted sets. There's going to be beautiful music. There's going to be sort of this arch proscenium style of filmmaking. But then I'm going to infuse it with my own style, and there's going to be like improvisation going on, and I'm going to get Robert De Niro to like really rage on like Liza Minnelli. And we're going to just sit there for hours improvising stuff until like half the crew runs away because they're so scared somebody's going to kill someone. And it's like, that's fascinating, Marty. I'm glad you're doing that. It'll be really interesting to see what results. And then what results is New York, New York, which people are like, what the fuck is this? And it's like, it is absolutely the movie he wanted to make. It's just that it's an experiment, and the experiment is like successful insofar as it is what it is. But it's hard to walk away from that saying, well, chalk another one up to the guy who made Taxi Driver,
What's so cool is the perspective that I have as someone so new to it is something that I know you and I both have in our movie viewing experiences, which is why sometimes a movie that like some people might be like, oh, it's trashy or whatever. It's like I really find myself almost like someone's monitoring my heart in movies, and when I get a jolt of like a great scene or a great sequence or a great performance, even in a bad movie, if I feel my heart start, I sit up straight. And in this movie, it's a long movie, the director's cut that I watched. And this movie, it was a very inconsistent, arrhythmic thing. Like there were bits that I'm like, this is not working for me. And if you were feeling my heart, it would just be like boring, boring, boring. And then some moments are so over the top and amazing that I was like, I could not walk away from this movie saying I hated it. I could say it doesn't work, but like Scorsese, I could say there's no way I could say I hated it. There were too many moments of just patter, speed, editing, energy. It like had something, and I could it's you can see, and your essay kind of unlocked it for me at the end. I'm like, oh my God, it's just her movie. Just let it be. All this rage to control what the movie is happening both behind the camera and in front of the camera. And the more I look at it, and I feel like it's a movie that I'm going to watch again. When I watch it again, I'm just going to like have complete blinders on and just be like, this is her movie. And then maybe that's where you get those freaks who are like, this is actually fantastic and a masterpiece. And I might not agree with them, but I can certainly see if there's in a way that you can focus in on an element of a movie and go, this is what I enjoy, then you could have an absolute blast with this.
Well, the little news story that I found, I think it was an interview that really sort of unlocked this idea for me, was an interview with, I believe, well, Kander and Ebb did the music. This was an interview with Kander, I think, years later, but he's talking about how how the song New York, New York came to be. Because, they had an earlier version of a song called New York, New York that didn't work. Or they had it and they played it, it didn't work, and he Kander himself was not a fan of the final song New York, New York, even though it
Was
was
one of the
maybe
biggest and
the most famous thing he's ever written, probably.
the most biggest and ubiquitous pieces of pop culture that's ever existed. Yeah, sure. I'm not happy with it.
But so like he they were had gone to meet with Scorsese to play him these songs, and there's the they play it, and at some point they say he said over on the couch a hand went up, and it was Robert De Niro, and he'd just been lying there like kind of listening to this stuff, and he had said and De Niro said, we've got Liza's song, The World Goes Round, and then we've got my song, New York, New York, and they should kind of be equivalent in power. And he said, "World Goes Round and Round is great. New York, New York isn't quite cutting it." This was the earlier version of the song, and he was the one who was like, "Can you go back and like write a better song?" And that was Kander's way of saying, "Oh, we had this other song, and we had to improve it because Robert De Niro, told us to." But I looked at that interview. I was like, "Wait, that's supposed to be his song? That's not his song.
Exactly,
That's not
exactly.
Jimmy's song. Like it's like one's supposed to be Francine's song, and the other's supposed to be Jimmy's song, and the movie ends with the two of them. No, like yes, we do see Jimmy playing it, instrumentally earlier, and it is kind of his song because it's his hit, like within the narrative of the movie." But the movie ends with Liza singing that song. That's her song, right? Like the other one is her song, and that's her song. Like that's this like the end of the movie completely belongs to Liza. The last 40, 30, 40 minutes, however much, because also the happy ending sequence, Liza's scene, Liza's sequence. And so you can sense in that structurally, they want it to be equal forces. Jimmy's doing his thing and Francine's doing her thing, and I mean it's kind of like La La Land, right? I mean La
Yes.
La Land kind of has the same structure if you think about it, right? It's like she finds her happiness and he finds his happiness, and they break up, but they're happy and everybody's kind of found their place, and that's great and we love it. But like that's not what the movie is. The movie is everybody get the fuck out of Liza's way. And that's the thing. It's like, and I don't know who, like, I don't know what the actual battles in the editing room were like, but it's kind of like, Marty, you're in love with this woman. She's broken your heart. You've broken her heart. At this point, they're probably not even together. It's like she's cheated on you. You cheated on her. Meanwhile, like you're both cheating on your spouses with each other. Like there was probably some kind of come to Jesus moment where it was just like, this is Liza's movie and you have to accept that. And deep down, you know it's Liza's movie because the entire thing has been driven by your absolute obsession with
Yeah,
her. Meanwhile, poor De
exactly.
Niro is like has to be like charming musician guy, and it's like the one thing he absolutely cannot really do. Like he's great, but he's like, every time he does something that's supposed to be funny and charming, it's like, is he gonna kill her? Is something horrible about to happen?
It's at that time where he absolutely did not have a command of comedy in his belt, which he has gotten much better in his older age. He's so good at some of his comedies are excellent, The Intern, the original Meet the Parents, all those things. But man alive, you're exactly right. There is just something sketchy. Like everyone's encountered that person where like you don't know if they're joking or they're about to get violent. And he's that character in this movie so bad.
Well, it's like that scene where she tells him she's pregnant, right? And in the back of that club, and he's like, "What'd you say?" And he like goes up the stairs and then hops back down. And at that point, there's this kind of relief because they're, "Oh, okay, he's happy."
Yeah.
And I think it's intentional. Like we're not supposed to know that, like, whether he's happy or not. Like, there is supposed to be a little tension there, and I'm like, this character is not charming if we are constantly worried that he's going to kill her.
And because Liza is so beautiful, she's such a porcelain doll at this time. And like, you're just like, don't, please don't hurt her. For the love of God. She just, in this movie particularly, she's just a doll. And you're like, don't. She
And
doesn't
she's
need any
so
more
good.
hostility in the world. She's amazing in this
Yeah.
movie.
She's so good. Every time, I mean, I always feel bad because I wind up mired in this debate, and I always wind up with people yelling at me. But whenever the, Scorsese doesn't make movies about women thing pops up, and people always point to Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, and which is fine. And but that's an older film. But like, people will always, we always mention the fact that, he's guided so many great actresses to, like, either their first Oscar nomination or their first Oscar win and stuff. So he's very good with female characters.
I think
But
now in 2025, the performance that continues to shock me, as in it's so shockingly amazing that you just don't even know how to process how good it is. And seeing, and we're in Letterboxd's world, you know, so you see people say they're top four. Sharon Stone in Casino. There are
Oh, fantastic.
every single great female actor that you know, that's one of their favorite movies, like everyone that you've ever seen. And they adore her, and they adore Scorsese for giving her that role.
Yeah.
That amazing, incredibly juicy thing is her.
Absolutely. Oh,
I have to
absolutely.
watch
And
Casino again today now,
I
God damn
know, right? We have
it.
to fucking watch. Every time I talk about Casino, I'm like, I really need to watch Casino again. But the thing about New York is, I mean, it's obviously a great part for Liza, but it is actually about, like, ultimately it is about the actress, and it is about her character, like, way
Yes.
more than it is about him. But it's also indicative of, like, Scorsese's whole process, because he still, I mean, he clearly sees this as a two-hander about these two characters, and he sees De Niro as having equivalent weight, and it's like he definitely struggles against this, and by the end he just kind of gives up and is like, okay, this is Liza's movie. So in that, there is also, you do sense some of, like, Scorsese is so good with actresses, but it's almost like he's pulled kicking and screaming into these
Yeah,
situations, and
it's.
suddenly his, like, the supporting actress suddenly becomes, like, the best thing in the movie. Keeps happening. I actually think it kind of happens with Killers of the Flower Moon, and like, which a movie I think is very good, but I do think that actually, like, some of the energy of that film dissipates, after
It's
she's
it oh
sidelined
it
a
ta
little
it
bit too.
ta it takes a long time to regain the momentum and
Yeah.
ferocity of the movie once Lily is
Yeah, she is
down.
carrying that movie. I mean, despite all the stylization, she is carrying that movie. And that's another case where it's like DiCaprio is great, but it's like the film kind of, to me, the film asks him to do certain things that he's not as good at, which is fine,
But it didn't, but it paved the way for Jesse Plemons
Oh yeah,
to just
absolutely.
crush. And also that movie, speaking of, this is what is so brilliant about De Niro in his later career. De Niro knows he's what, like third, fourth, you know, fiddle on that list of killers of the Flower Moon particularly, which means that every single moment that he's in the movie, he somehow absolutely evaporates and eviscerates anyone who is sharing the screen with him, and he destroys it, and he becomes, perhaps aside from Lily, the most memorable thing in the damn movie. He like
Yeah.
he's not it's not a two-hander. It's not about his morality. It's about his amorality. We don't need to see him all the time, but every single second you see that unctuous thing that he is, you're like, he's amazing. And it's just that's I think that's both of them getting, we don't have to do this as a two-hander. It's actually kind of an ensemble.
Well, and De Niro haunts that movie in two ways. One, through the character that he's playing, and two, for me, through the fact that every time I watch DiCaprio, I'm like, God damn it, young De Niro would have killed this part. The De Niro of Mean
Yeah.
Streets, the
Oh.
dumb, menacing, kind of unpredictable De Niro of Mean Streets, like, that's kind of what you need for that part. Like, a guy who will do all sorts of things and not quite be aware of just, like, what a monster he is,
And also the DiCaprio from The Departed would have killed the Plemons part. Like
Oh yeah, of course,
he would have just
absolutely.
killed it. And he's like, no, I'll do the other part. I'll do the other part.
Yeah.
And I also think that Plemons would have maybe crushed that DiCaprio part, because that was the original thing, right? Wasn't it? Plemons was him
Yeah.
and then DiCaprio, and then they flipped. And I'm like, Jesse Plemons would crush that part. He would have
Yeah.
crushed it. He's an amazing actor.
Yeah.
But we go back to New York, New York, which is
Yes.
that it's look, I was so happy whenever I see your name on any piece of physical media, I'm always very happy to revisit it. And I'll go, well, if Bilge has dedicated some time to this, and especially if it's something I haven't seen or I don't think I like, I'm gonna give it a second shake. And so thank you so much for your contribution to this. Thanks to Imprint for bringing out this great release. It's absolutely stuffed. It's got
It's huge.
the director's cut is 163 minutes. And there's a European cut that's 137. So that's an edited. It has intros and audio commentaries by Scorsese. There's other video essays by Daniel Kremer, who also does the audio commentary as well. There's just so many like docos, archival interviews with Liza, with Marty.
And
It's really great.
Daniel is a head. Like Daniel
Is the
is
guy.
like he loves New York, New York.
Yeah.
So
He's
he's like
like,
the
that's
perfect
what
guy
I'm
for
not quite on the Kremer.
us.
Like I can't meet Daniel, but I'm like, I can see a path to it. You know, it's
Yep.
not just like crazy. It's like I can see a path to like if you could just watch this movie and somehow adjust your own internal focus,
It's a
there's enough.
great rewatch. It's one of those films where you have to watch it first to see what it isn't, and then you can kind of just enjoy it afterwards. Every time I rewatched it was so fun working on this because you just rewatch the movie. It's just like, oh, I'm gonna get to watch New York, New York again tonight, you know? And like there are certain parts that don't work, but it's like it's okay. There's something coming up right
There's
now.
something
It's gonna
coming
be
up.
really
I'm gonna be
good.
typing. I'm gonna look up. I'm gonna pause. I'm gonna smile. I'm gonna write another thought. You know, that's it. That's it. Great to talk to you as always, my friend. I think by the time people are listening to this, you're gonna help me. We've already recorded it, but you're gonna help me close out our series, Roam In, the
Oh
final
yeah,
episode of
that's
that
right.
series. I've been holding it back, because around the middle of September, we've got Them Insider coming, which you'll form part of at some point as well. So
Absolutely.
great to talk to you. Great to see you. Thank you for coming along again. And folks, if you want these great Scorsese box sets, there's a couple of great ones. There's the Scorsese religion box set and faith box set rather, which is amazing. Also features some Bilger in there as well. And then this Raging Bull New York double, which are amazing. So thank you so much, my friend. And we'll catch you on another episode of Imprint Companion soon.
Absolutely.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.